For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome back to the Dirt Show. I'm going to start today with a rewrite of one of my favorite songs. New York, New York, it's a hell of a town. Columbia's up. The courtroom is down. Today on Exhibit New York is the worst of New York. The worst. What's going on in Columbia is a disaster. As you'll hear from me, it's potentially more dangerous than January 6th and what happened in West Virginia. What's happening in the courtroom today, downtown, is so dangerous to the Constitution and to the rule of law. Let's start with downtown. We'll start with downtown and the courthouse. I've been doing this 60 years, teaching 10,000 students criminal law, writing 2,000 articles, 55 books, most of them, many of them at least, deal with criminal law. I've probably litigated more cases than any criminal defense lawyer in America who's not a public defender. I don't get it. Remember the old commercial, Where's the Beef? I don't understand what the crime is that Donald Trump is being charged with. It's not a crime to pay hush money, otherwise Alexander Hamilton would be in jail. If the government wants to make it a crime to pay hush money, let them pass a statute. If they want to make it a crime to fail to disclose the payment of hush money, let them pass a law. There is no such law. There's no such law against paying hush money. And there's no such law against this business of catch and kill. The testimony today and tomorrow is going to be from this guy, Pecker, from the National Review or whatever it's called, the National, I don't remember, some newspaper that, you know, exposes things. And apparently, according to the accusation, Trump, what he did, Pecker, is he would get people like Susan McDougal or the porn star Daniels and buy their story from them for $100,000 and get an exclusive. And then never run the story. It's pretty sleazy journalism. It's not a crime. So what is the crime? The crime apparently is putting on a corporate record payment as legal expenses when the payment was hush money to Stormy Daniels. There are about 1,000 problems wrong with that. Number one, the statement in the corporate account didn't happen until a year after the election, apparently. Number two, the statement technically is probably true. I mean, he paid legal expenses to try to stop a lawsuit from occurring. Some corporate person wrote it down as legal expenses. He paid it to his lawyer and then paid his lawyer back, or his lawyer paid it and he paid the lawyer back. At worst comes to worst, that's a state misdemeanor. Problem is barred by the statute of limitations. So in order to get it out of the statute of limitations and turn it from a barred misdemeanor into an available felony, he has to come up with this really great idea. The purpose, see, the purpose behind paying the hush money and then not disclosing it or writing that it was a legal fee was to fool the voters into voting for him in the 2016 election. The voters who already knew from the Access Hollywood tape, you know, all about his sexual peccadilloes. But the problem with that is that the federal government looked into it and the Federal Election Commission looked into it, and they all concluded it wasn't a federal crime and it wasn't a violation of federal election laws. So you get the state, in this case, the borough, which has no jurisdiction over federal elections. then coming in and saying, yeah, they might not have thought it was really an election fraud, but it is. And so we're going to go after him for a state misdemeanor. We're going to turn it into a state felony as the result of a federal felony that was never charged, and as a result of an entry that occurred a year after the election in order to influence the election because time must run backwards. I mean, Alice in Wonderland couldn't have written a crazier scenario for the Queen. The Queen said, punishment first, to trial thereafter, no crime as it has to occur, and wouldn't it be better if there were no crime? That's exactly what's happening here. There is no crime. There's just no crime. You can't take three non-crimes, put them together, and create a crime. But according to CNN, this is the worst and most serious crime since the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, much more serious than the assassination of John Kennedy. And the evidence is overwhelming. I mean, there's not even any doubt about the evidence. Ask all these lawyers that are experts on CNN. There's no doubt about it. Most serious crime, most credible witnesses. There'll be a conviction. Maybe there will be a conviction. Wouldn't be a conviction if the trial were in Staten Island or in Rockland County, but maybe there'd be a conviction when you have jurors drawn from a pool of 85% voters who hate Donald Trump, voted against him, and will do anything to prevent him from being the president again. So much for our criminal justice system. All right, that's downtown. Now let's go uptown to Columbia, where young Hitler youth are now screaming, "We are Hamas! Remember October 7th, we'll do it again and again and again. We will do it 100 times. We'll do it 1,000 times. Do what? Rape Jewish women? Behead children? Take prisoners? Hostages? Bring them to Gaza? Sell them? Kill many of them? Is that what you're going to do when you say we're Hamas? Is that what you're going to do when you say we want to see October 7th again and again and again and again? All right. So a bunch of professors who never care about free speech, who has never done anything about free speech or academic freedom, suddenly are on the side of these thugs, these bigots, these anti-Semites, these racists. Suddenly they've discovered the First Amendment. You think that they would apply the First Amendment if the shoe were on the other foot? What if this were a gang of Ku Klux Klan white supremacists and racists who were calling for the raping of Black women, for the lynching of Black men, for the return of apartheid to South Africa, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Indian Ocean? South Africa will be free of all Blacks and white supremacy will reign once again. Can you imagine the president of Columbia University saying, well, we're a private university, you know, we can't call the police. We'll let you encamp there and put up your Ku Klux Klan signs. We'll let you call for the rapes of Black women. We'll do it in the interest of academic freedom. After all, calling for the rape of Black women or calling for the rape of Jewish women, that's academic freedom. That's why we send our kids and pay $90,000 a year for tuition to teach them to chant, it's okay to rape Jewish women. No, the university would never permit it if it were directed against Blacks or gays or transgenders. They would figure out some way of banning it. But they're not going to do it when it comes to Jews, when it comes to Israel, because there's an absolute double standard. And the double standard comes from the bureaucracy called DEI. You know what that stands for. And you know what it actually means. It means no diversity, only racial diversity, no intellectual diversity, no equality, and no inclusion. And where do all these students come from? Many of them are foreign students. They're admitted, many of them without qualifications, based on DEI criteria. DEI criteria says you don't judge people on meritocracy. You judge them on their racial, ethnic, gender, whatever, identity, and you include them, but you don't include Jews. Harvard's Jewish population went down from 23% when I was a professor there to about 9%, which was even lower than when President Lowell, a racist president, imposed anti-Semitic quotas back in the early part of the 20th century. So when you stop admitting Jews, when you start admitting many unqualified students from foreign countries, many of them from Arab and Muslim countries, what do you expect? You're going to get this kind of bigotry on campus. You're inviting it. You're inviting it. You're welcoming it. And that's what's going on today on university campuses. Columbia, a rabbi at Columbia, told his students to stay home. I mean, I can imagine a rabbi in Germany in 1933 telling students to stay home from the University of Munich. You had students barring, blocking a Jewish student from entering the school. That's what used to happen at the University of Munich and the University of Berlin, at the University of Heidelberg. And those were great universities. Columbia University used to be a great university. Harvard used to be a great university. These have turned into mediocre, polemical propaganda mills. Oh, you know, maybe their science is still good. Although some of the scientists preach this kind of racism against Jews. And then, of course, CNN always manages to find the one Jew who belongs to an organization called Jewish Voice for Peace, which mostly is not a Jewish organization. It's an old-fashioned neo-communist radical organization that believes Israel shouldn't exist. It finds the one Jew and interviews him and says, well, it's nothing to be scared of. If you're Jewish, I'm Jewish, and these anti-Israel people are welcoming me. Of course they are, because you don't believe in Israel's right to exist. But if you're Jewish and you believe in Israel's right to exist, and you believe that Israel has the right to thrive as the nation state of the Jewish people, you are not safe at the Columbia campus. And thankfully, donors like Bob Kraft, my friend, the owner of the New England Patriots, one of the great, great people of sports and just being a decent guy, has threatened to cut off major contributions to Columbia, as Bill Ackman and others have cut off major contributions to other schools. I've advised people to cut off contributions. I will never contribute a nickel to Harvard University, where I taught for 50 years, or Yale University, where I went and, you know, was first in my class, editor-in-chief of the Yale Law Journal. I won't give him a nickel. The president of Yale University was a very decent guy. But being a president has one qualification. You have to be a coward. You have to not have any kind of courage, because you can't stand up to these people, because half the faculty are pro-Hamas. And if you dare to talk about the double standard, there'll be a faculty revolt. You talk about free speech. I can't speak at Harvard about Israel. I can't speak at Columbia about Israel. When I was invited to speak at Columbia by Amnesty International Student Group, when they found out it was me and that I'm pro-Israel, they withdrew their support. When Harvard group of students invited me, I couldn't speak at the law school for, quote, security reasons. I had to speak at Chabad headquarters 5767 blocks away from the law school. I haven't been invited to the law school once to speak about Israel in the 10 years since I became an emeritus professor. There's no level playing field. This is free speech for me, but not for thee. Free speech against Israel, but not for Israel. I am not aware of a single professor at the Harvard Law School. There are about 100 of them, maybe a plurality of them Jewish. I'm not aware, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm not aware of a single professor who stood up for the Jewish students and who stood up for Israel. I know a lot of them believe it, but they don't have the guts to stand up and say it. They're afraid their student evaluations will go down. That's what happened to me. I was the most popular teacher at Harvard Law School. I got the highest ratings until I started to support Israel openly. And then the ratings went down because a group of 10 or 15 students would get together and give me a zero rating. I got a zero in knowledge of the criminal law. There's nobody at Harvard that knew more about criminal law than I did. but I got a zero in knowledge about criminal law. I got a zero in accessibility out of class. I had an open door policy. I took every single student to lunch. But because I was pro-Israel, the students got together to give me a zero. I had tenure and I couldn't care less. But what if you don't have tenure? What if you're an assistant or an associate professor and you alienate your students by coming out in favor of Israel? You don't have to support Netanyahu. You don't have to support the current Israeli government. All you have to do is support the right of Israel to exist as the nation state of the Jewish people. You can do as I do, support a two-state solution. Believe that there could be a Palestinian state. Not now, not as a reward for Hamas's barbarism, but sometime in the future, if a Palestinian state could live peacefully alongside of a nation state of the Jewish people. We know that they couldn't under Hamas. The Hamas charter doesn't accept a two-state solution. And when I had dinner with Mahmoud Abbas, the head of the Palestinians, I asked him if he was willing to say that he accepts Israel as the nation state of the Jewish people. No, he wouldn't say it. So how do you have a two-state solution with somebody who doesn't recognize your state? So why do I think that the Columbia bigots and racists and anti-Semites and Hitler Youth, why do I think they're worse, more dangerous potentially than what happened on January 6th and what happened at Charlottesville? Both were terrible. What happened on January 6th was awful. I do represent one of the young men, but he didn't do anything violent. He just went in when he was welcomed in by the police. And but I don't agree with him. He knows that. And I sure think that some of the people who went in and who committed violence deserve to be punished. And I surely don't agree with the Charlottesville. We will replace, Jews will not replace us. That's terrible. That's anti-Semitic. That's racist. That's terrible. But it's not as bad as what's going on in Columbia. Let me explain why. How many people were there at Charlottesville that were screaming, Jews will not replace us? 10, 20, 30? I don't know. Less than 50. How many people went into the Capitol? Okay. A couple of thousand. It's a lot. How many students are involved in these racist protests against Jews in Israel? Tens of thousands of students, and they are products of an elite university. They come from good families. Many of them are wealthy. They're paying $90,000 tuition a year. Many of them will be our future leaders. Today, they're yelling, we are Hamas. Today, they're yelling, Hamas will do the same thing again as October 7th, not 10 times, not 100 times, 1,000 times. Every day will be a new October 7th, new rapes, new beheadings, new abductions. These people are now applying for jobs at law firms. They're applying for jobs at the New York Times, at CNN, at Goldman Sachs. I hope they're identified and their names made public. If I find out the names of any of these students who yelled out, we are Hamas, or Hamas, we'll do this over in October 7th, I would put their pictures on this show and I would give their names and I would send their names to every employer that they're applying to. First Amendment is based on the marketplace of ideas, and the marketplace of ideas is help when you know who is making these outrageous, racist, anti-Semitic statements. So what I worry is there are future leaders. Yeah, they will work for the New York Times. That wouldn't surprise me. They will work at universities and colleges. That wouldn't surprise me. They will run for Congress. They will be the future Ilhan Omeras and other bigots who now sit in Congress. Cori Bush, an out-and-out racist and anti-Semite. That's who our future leaders will be. There were no future leaders involved in Charlottesville, and I doubt there are very many future leaders involved in going into the Capitol on January 6th. But there are future leaders who are camping out at Columbia today supporting the people who are yelling, we are Hamas, and October 7th will be repeated over again and over again and over again. So it's more dangerous. It's more dangerous because it's mainstream. It's more dangerous because the people at Columbia and the people at Yale and the people at Berkeley and the people at Rutgers are our children, thankfully not mine, but they are the children of elite people. people who have good jobs, people who have good resources, people who can afford to send their children to $90,000 a year schools, many of whom aren't getting an education because they're majoring in these ethnic studies programs. There should be no ethnic studies programs at any university. If you're Black and you go study Black, you know, history, Black society, Black this, you know, racial this, racial that, you're not learning anything. If there's going to be a Black studies department, people who go there should be white. And if there's a Jewish studies department, people who go there should be not Jewish. You don't go to college to join a department that's a cheerleader for your ethnic group. These ethnic departments have been at the forefront of anti-Semitism, including Jewish studies departments and including Middle East and Israel studies departments, because they tend to attract the most radical anti-Israel, anti-Jewish people into the departments, with exceptions, to be sure, with exceptions. But some of the worst statements that came after October 7th, I'm not talking about after Israel invaded Gaza, I'm talking about before Israel invaded Gaza, were done by people from these departments and from the bureaucracy of DEI. So as long as we have DEI, as long as we have ethnic studies departments, we're going to see increasing anti-Semitism. As long as DEI favors the admission of often unqualified students who are paid for by Qatar or paid for by other Arab countries or are paid for by universities to come from abroad and burn American flags and talk about death to America. As long as we have that, we're going to continue to see universities be at the center of the new anti-Semitism, which is so reminiscent of the old anti-Semitism of the 1930s. People forget that the 1930s anti-Semitism and Castro's communism, which was also anti-Semitism, were centered at universities. And the useful idiots who marched in support of Castro and Hitler and Stalin, the useful idiots were 23-year-olds, 24-year-old students. And the difference is, in those days, I don't think very many of them were Jewish. Today, you have Jewish useful idiots. At least they say they're Jewish. Jewish Voice for Peace, as you know, is not a Jewish organization. It's an organization consisting largely of non-Jews who use the term Jewish to get into the New York Times. And the New York Times and CNN interviews these kids, and they, oh, we're Jewish Voice for Peace, so we're Jews who support, you know, this and that. No, they don't. They're Jews who oppose the existence of the State of Israel. And they'll do anything to dismantle it. They also oppose America. They are what we used to call communists. We don't use that term very much anymore, but they're anarchists. They don't believe in America. They don't believe in Western values. They don't believe in the Judeo-Christian tradition. They believe in radicalism. And what they want to replace Israel with, if you go to Columbia campus and ask students honestly, all right, from the river to the sea, you don't want any Israel anymore. What should replace Israel? Half of them would say a Muslim caliphate where women must wear certain religious garb, where they're not allowed to jive, where gays are murdered. Half of them would say that. We want Iran. We want Iran on the Jordan River. We want Iran on the Mediterranean. That's one half. The other half will say, we would like to see a kind of communist, left-wing, radical, anti-civil liberties government. In fact, there are several Palestinian groups, the PFLP, Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, is an overtly communist organization that wants to see Palestine become a communist state. Then there are other Palestinian groups that are really just offshoots of the Muslim Brotherhood. They want to see a caliphate where women and gays are relegated to, well, women to second class status and gays to being buried after they're murdered. You know, gays for Hamas, you know, chickens for KFC. How stupid can you be to be a gay for Hamas? You know what would happen to you if you were a gay for Hamas in Gaza. You would be a dead gay for Hamas. But useful idiots don't care. They see martyrs. It's fun. They don't care that Jewish students are intimidated or afraid to come to class or worried. They don't care that a Jewish student almost got her eye poked out by having a Palestinian flag shoved into her eye. She had to go to the hospital. So that's what we're confronting. And that's why I think it's potentially more dangerous even than January 6th. But we're not seeing. We're seeing these kids get released as soon as they're arrested. And they go back and they start screaming, "We are Hamas" again. We have teachers who are protesting and will have a teaching and won't teach until these students are given amnesty. Why should they be given amnesty? They violated the rules of the university. Just because you're rooting for them, because you're on their side, because they're in favor of Hamas, that doesn't mean they should be given amnesty. Would you say the same thing if a Jewish student were arrested? No, you wouldn't, because you're a bigot and you're a hypocrite and you believe in a double standard. And that's what universities have come to. So, boy, part of me is glad that I left Harvard 10 years ago and became emeritus professor. Part of me is sad. I wish I were there because I'd be the only person in all of Harvard University today standing up for Jewish kids and fighting for their rights. I wish there were more people who would do that. Larry Summers does it to a degree, but he does it, you know, consistent with his role as the former president of Harvard. I have no such restrictions, but I don't get invited to speak at places like Harvard and Columbia because they don't want to hear my point of view. Thank God for the podcast where you do want to hear my point of view. So thanks and keep writing letters. And let me read some of the letters. There were a number of letters about the Mayorkas impeachment. Remember, I called the Republicans and the Democrats both hypocrites. You can't be in favor of impeaching Trump and against impeaching Mayorkas, or you can't be against impeaching Trump and in favor of impeaching Mayorkas. The cases both have in common that neither of them charged a constitutionally permissible criteria for impeachment. You know, you might say, as others would say, here's a letter. Did Mayorkas or did he not lie to Congress when he told them the border is secure? I don't believe them. I don't think the border is secure, but that's not perjury. That's not a crime. That's a political statement. Democrats think the border is secure. Republicans think it's not. They're probably both overstating it a bit. That's politics. That's not a crime. It's not criminal type behavior akin to treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors. Okay. It's okay, Dersh, by the time the Biden regime is finished, there won't be any constitution left for you to argue over. You can finally retire. No. Even if there were no constitution, if I were living in England, I would still be arguing for exactly the same values, whether they're in a constitution or not, free speech, civil liberties, due process, and all the rest. Okay. Republicans are only playing the cards they are dealt. In other words, you're justifying hypocrisy. You're saying since the Democrats impeached Trump, we're unconstitutionally, we're entitled to impeach Mayorkas unconstitutionally. No, I don't. That's not the way I approach morality. Two wrongs just make a third wrong. And so I am not in favor of it. Mayorkas is not doing his job as director of Homeland Security. That may be right. He is not defending the homeland. That may be right. Not an impeachable offense. Oh, here's the typical one. You helped OJ get out of murder. Who are you to judge? Let me tell you who I am to judge. I'm a lawyer, and that's what I do. And I help defendants. And it was the prosecution, the jury, and the police that resulted in the verdict in the OJ case, not the defense lawyers. We did our job exposing the corruption of the police and the prosecution, and the verdict reflected that. Okay. Congressman Bernie Thompson has introduced a bill to strip Donald Trump of Secret Service protection should he go to jail. After seeing it goes on to say bad things about Thompson, but that would be a terrible thing to do. He would be hurt if he didn't have Secret Service protection. We don't want to see our presidents, our former presidents, people who are running for the presidency hurt. Okay, here's another typical dumb one. Every once in a while, Alan shows his true covers. He's a dyed-in-the-wool liberal Biden lubber. I don't even know if I'm going to vote for Biden. I have an open mind. I haven't made up my mind yet. If I had to vote today, I'm not sure I'd vote for Biden today. I have real doubts about how he's handled many of these issues. I think he's done some good things. I think he's done some bad things. I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to wait and see what other candidates have to say. But I'm not a Biden lover, and I'm not a Democratic Party lover. I will vote the way I think is best for the United States, best for world peace. An eye for an eye, Alan, it's even in the Bible, but you know what they say, an eye for an eye just results in two people going blind. What we need is to do justice. Justice does require that when harm is done, there be some accountability and some punishment, but I'm not sure that an eye for an eye does it exactly the right way. Actually, in the Jewish law, an eye for an eye has been interpreted as monetary payments equivalent to an eye. There was never a time in Jewish history, even under the Bible, where they actually poked the eye out of somebody who had poked the eye out of somebody else. So we'll have more of this tomorrow, and we'll have more about Donald Trump's trial tomorrow, which will be in its first full day. Today, somebody had a dental appointment, so they had to stop the trial halfway through. The judge wouldn't allow Orthodox Jews to serve on the jury because they might have to leave early on Friday. But if somebody has a dental appointment, that's good enough. American justice. We'll talk more about that tomorrow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.